to the Broadcast Basement On Demand Radio Network.
It's the podcast in the Broadcast Basement.
Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day it's different. They change, but they don't know what they want. All they do is change, yeah, yeah, yeah. Going left, going right, travel day, travel night. That's where we'll go. No excuses, no goodbyes, no one cries, no one lies. We'll never know.
So what do you think? I wasn't here last week, obviously, and I apologize for that. Vocal cords were just shredded, and doctor was like, you can't talk, which I felt so bad. You had such a sad face. Like, I could see you, like, and you're just like, when I was telling you, and you're just like, you're just so sad. And then you did such a wonderful job on your own. I'm very, very proud of you, my friend. You did a wonderful job on your own, and now I'm back, and I'm thinking to myself after listening to you, because I couldn't get to participate, after listening to you, I thought it was a bold stance to sit there and basically call for the firing of the front office and the managerial staff. I mean, here we are. You're a brand new podcast. You're right away. You're like, fire everybody. You know, when I produced the show for you, I thought about calling the name of the show "Fire Everyone." Like, I almost like named it that episode.
It's like hashtag fire everyone.
Hashtag fire everyone.
Yeah, and the crazy part is that I didn't even. I kind of thanked them though.
Yeah, and I didn't understand that.
Well, because here, I mean,
you see, you're a nicer fan than me. Like, even as critical as you were, I felt like you're a nicer fan than me. If you don't win a World Series, you failed. That's how I see it. Okay,
yes.
A division championship is nice. They're exciting, but the name of the game is winning World Series.
I don't know what that is. What's the division?
I know. The name of the game is a World Series. If you want to say the name of the game is winning pennants, you could make that argument. I'm sure Dodger fans will sit around and say, no, that's not good enough. See what I'm saying? Like, they go, no, I want World Series. Yankee fans want World Series. Why? You know, there should be nothing wrong with a fan base saying, I want World Series. And if you're going to tell me, well, I'm a small market team, or I can't survive with the big boys, and you're going to wax poetic about how hard it is, first, I'm going to remind you that now with the way that things are set up, the teams that are smaller market teams get help and assistance from Major League Baseball to be able to sign guys. They get more international signing bonus money. They get more things to help them out because they want to add to the competitive balance. If you're not using those things, you're a failure. If you're not using them correctly, you're a failure. And the thing is that I think all fan bases should be able to sit there and say, I want a World Series during the reign of my front office and manager, or my front office and manager have to go, and the limit should be you either competed for a World Series within 5 years, so I'll give you an extra two to see if you can finish it off, or you're out in 5 years. But 5 to 7 years, everybody should be gone, and if things aren't working. Am I nuts?
You're not nuts, because we're sitting here right now in the 11th year of our general manager. 11 years. And he did so much within the first 4 or 5 years he was in there. Every single signing he was making was hitting. Every single draft pick was hitting. There wasn't anything he was... It seemed like everything he touched was turning to gold. And now he's kind of stuck, and he's like spinning his wheels because he's doing the same things over and over again. I talked on like the last podcast that he's saying we should sign another Hap, we should sign another Liriano the first time he was around, we should sign another Volquez. And that was stuff that he did, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. It's done. That stuff can't happen anymore.
Here's the problem. The problem is that for decades in baseball was the same game. The baseball was essentially the same game in the 30s as it was in the 40s, and the same game in the 40s that it was the 50s. I mean, certain things changed. You got certain stars. The long ball started to continue to become a bigger thing. Ballparks changed a little bit in size, but it was always the same game. You had to have a speed demon that got on base, but basically stole a lot of bases sitting up at the top of your order. You wanted a table setter that was hitting two. You wanted to have your big bats hitting three, four, and five. And then after that, you're looking for defense, and there's a basic thing that was going on with every team in baseball. And then around the time that the Moneyball thing started, which a lot of people, I think, make a mistake. They think that Billy Beane wrote that book. He didn't write that book. The author was doing a story, was around when the whole thing was happening with Billy Beane, and kind of exposed what Billy Beane was doing. If you were Billy Beane, you probably wished that that book was never published, because you might have gotten a few more years before people understood what you were doing with sabermetrics. Because people were behind. Like, Bill James had been writing about it forever. I remember my dad used to have a book in the basement bathroom, and every year he had the Bill James Almanac, and it kind of broke down the stats. But you need to have a guy that could really interpret that. Now, that was a major advancement. But if you look at now, the advancements, year in, year out, things change so quickly on how you evaluate talent and how you build a team, whether or not the bunt is even a viable option, whether or not you really need to have the speed demon, maybe you want the guy with the better on base percentage up at the top. You know, where's the prime of a player? I mean, just this year, teams started to argue that the prime of a player is actually in a 23, 24, 25 year instead of around the 27, 28 year that people used to say that it was. The statistics continue to change the game. So if you were good at your job as early as 5 years ago, if you don't evolve, you're dead now. You should be out. You either evolve or you die. So he did great 5 years ago. But if he's not evolving and he's doing the same thing that worked for him 5 years ago, he's behind the times. This is almost like the NFL now, where there's like a new system comes out every 2 years and you got to either copycat it, find something better, or you die. And that's what baseball is starting to become, at least in the front office, I think.
Yeah, and we have a bunch of guys sitting here that are like basically reliving their 2013, 2014, 2015 seasons.
Did we win a World Series during that time?
No.
Is there some sort of a banner out in the outfield during that time?
No.
Why is it romanticized then? You know, I mean, think about other franchises. I'll name franchises right now for you. Imagine if the New York Yankees, if Brian Cashman would have had just an amazing 2013, and he was still hanging his hat on that 6 years later. Do you think he'd still be the general manager of the New York Yankees?
There's no way.
Do you think that the manager would still be the manager of the New York Yankees?
I mean, right now we're sitting here where the general manager of the Boston Red Sox is on the hot seat because they won the World Series last year, and he may not make the playoffs this year. And there's people thinking, is his job over? Like, is he done? Like, did he not continue what he was doing? So with Neil Huntington, it's been over for a while. And especially like with the quotes that he was given last time and the new quote that he gave this time, which I just basically, once again, just blew my mind. He basically was talking about trying to fill the catcher position. Because, you know, catcher, I understand. It is a tough position to fill across Major League Baseball. In like my eyes, it is. Because there are so many guys that start out as catchers that don't, you know, fulfill that through the minor leagues, the whole way to the major leagues, because of either injuries or not being able to do like the framing. It's either offense, defense. There's guys that don't make it. I get that. But he's saying that's like one of the hardest positions to fill. You've had 12 years to draft somebody, to sign somebody, to play that continuously. And right now he hasn't done that. He had Russell Martin for a couple years. He's had Cervelli for a couple years. And then now he has two guys, which he brought on. He can't blame anybody else for that. He can't be like a new general manager that basically says, you know, this was somebody else that did this before me. No, these are guys that you brought on. You brought on Jacob Stallings in 2012 as a seventh round draft pick. You picked up Elias Diaz in like 2009 off of, you know, the amateur free agents. And you've been trying to build these guys for this many years, and this is the best that you get right now, which I don't know if you've looked at their stats lately. It's not even cutting it. I mean, Elias Diaz is terrible. Stallings is middling. So if anybody's at fault for this and you're like looking to see somebody to fill, I mean, this is on you, Huntington. This is honestly on you. You can't blame anybody else for this. You've had 12 years to build a team, and this is the team you've given us.
And here's the thing. It's all about evaluation of talent. There are several catchers that became available either through trade or through just being released. I mean, James McCann for the White Sox was an all-star this year. He was DFA'd by Detroit. Everybody had a shot at that guy. See what I'm saying? He was just floating. Yeah. He was a free agent pickup. And then the same team, the Sox, they traded away a guy by the name of Omar Narváez to the Seattle Mariners for a relief pitcher. Omar Narváez this year, just here's a guy that, like, he was their backup catcher. The Mariners were able to identify him as they think he could be something if he got enough at-bats. He gets 350-some at-bats so far this year. He's got 19 home runs. He's hitting .286. And right now, he's got it over an 800 OPS. These are two names. And, I know they're connected to the same team there. Those are two names right off the bat that I can think of that are playing up at the top of the ranks of catchers across Major League Baseball right now that any team had a chance at. And you can sit there and say, well, they were lucky, they were fortunate. But a job of a general manager is to start to find those little things. Look, when I sit around, I play fantasy baseball, fantasy football, something like that. You play fantasy sports? You play fantasy sports, right?
Yeah,
you just joined my fantasy baseball league. We're going to talk about it a little bit here on the show. I think it'll be fun. I got Craig to join my dynasty fantasy baseball league, which is insane. Okay? You try to find guys before they become big. You're trying to identify. Everybody knows who the best players are. But you try to identify the guys that are going to be good at it. My thing is that some general managers in baseball aren't good enough to run a fantasy team, let alone a major league team. If you're going to miss every once in a while, but you can't miss year after year after year. You can't miss that badly on what you're doing. And then if you do miss and a guy doesn't develop, then it's either on you or you have the wrong guys in place. You got the wrong guys that are teaching him the game. You got the wrong manager in there who's not putting him in the right situations. But it's got to be something. If you go through the offseason this year after all the missteps and nothing changes, then you just accept failure. And then you're asking your fan base to accept failure. And I think in this day and age, the way that the world works with all the different things that you can do for your entertainment dollar, why would you put up with that? You know, why are you going to gather up the kids and drop 200 bones at the ballpark? You know, I mean, and that's the problem that I have. I think that any good business finds it, the guys who are getting it done. And if they're not getting it done, they move on from them.
The Pirates basically build on hope. It's always hope for the next year. It's always hope for the beginning of, the season. It's hope moving forward. When they got to 44 and 45 at the All-Star break, Neil Huntington, Coonley, Nutting, our owner, are just pretty much, they're over the moon with themselves because they're like, you know what? Almost no matter what happens for the rest of the season, I mean, they couldn't see the catastrophic thing that was going to happen, but you're still going to have people following to say, you know what? This core that we have here right now got us to one game, under 500, two games out of first place at the All-Star break. So if stuff doesn't break bad after the All-Star break, then we're still in it. So that's like kind of the worst thing that could happen for a Pirates fan. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but here's the thing. Do you, as a reasonable Pirates fan, a guy who goes to minor league ball games and evaluates minor league talent, who pours over stat sheets, who looks at his team critically... Even at that point, did you think that team was good enough to win the Central Division? And if they won the Central Division, were they good enough to get past the Dodgers or the Braves?
No, they weren't.
Okay, so did it matter? Like, I mean, here's the thing. Like, again, it goes back to what is the ultimate goal? And I think that teams that have poor luck or poor results or just a poor decade or so, they start to lower expectations. So I just want to make it into playoffs. And, you know, that's great. And I think it would be a magical thing. You end up in, you win the division or something like that. But in the end, you want more than that.
We're sitting here and what people didn't see is it was almost like kind of like a reality check for me. We swept the Reds this past weekend. Like swept them. And the second game we won 14-0. It was like everybody's like posting like, oh, we won by 2 touchdowns, all this kind of different stuff. And I was like, I put myself like in a bubble when I went into work today, and I probably should have been working for the first half hour, but I wasn't. I wanted to see some of the pre-All-Star numbers and post-All-Star numbers of some of the players that I had in my head. Because they're like, oh, Josh Bell got his 32nd home run. He's over 100 RBIs, which I love. But here's the thing is, the guy was batting 302. This is a slash line. 302, 376, 648. And this was pre-All-Star break. 27 home runs, 84 RBIs. Post-All-Star break, his slash line is 198. 312, 366 with 5 home runs and 19 RBIs. So it's not even like he had like a decline. It's not even like he has like a little bit of a slump going. I mean, he has a complete regression of what's going on. And there's players that they, unfortunately, like Adam Frazier got named Player of the Week right prior to the All-Star break. So everybody was like off of him for a little bit. I've been on this thing from the beginning that he is not an everyday second baseman.
He's brutal. He's brutal. He's not even He's not even a replacement level player. Look, since the All-Star break, Marte, Reynolds, and Ozuna, those are the only three hitters on your team with an OPS over 800. And then you have Moran with a 701 OPS and everybody else below a 700. That's horrible. And the guy that you're bringing up, I love it. I love that you keep bringing him up, because here's a guy that shouldn't be an everyday ball player. A 630 OPS, a 215 batting average since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
That's absolutely brutal.
No, and then we have other players that are even worse. I mean, like Pablo Reyes had a walk-off on Friday night against the Reds, and don't get me wrong, like, I'm happy for the dude. I want to win the games. I mean, there's guys out there, I hear some of the other people saying, let's just lose as many as we can to get a better draft pick. And I kind of understand that to a degree, but you still have Huntington in charge. Are you going to let him make your draft pick? And I'm happy for Reyes, but right now, since he's been back from injury, he's batting 165. That was Gonzalez. Pablo Reyes, since they called him up, is 165, 224, and 253. Eric Gonzalez, since back from injury, is 203, 267, 253, with combined 2 home runs and 11 RBIs between them. Why are those guys even in the lineup?
It's bad. Will they actually make a change? Do you think there's any possible chance the manager's gone, the general manager's gone, the hitting coach is gone, like just something happens? What's the chances?
Well, it's pretty much there's like no chance. At least a lot of people say Hurdle's gone. Unless he chooses to leave himself, I feel like there's no way he's gone. He's got
why
two
is
more
it
years
though?
In his contract.
But why is that though? Why is he so beloved for somebody that's never brought a pennant?
For a team that had 20 losing seasons, he took us to the playoffs 3 years in a row.
And he starts stupid fights with teams for no reason whatsoever, and he's behind in the times, and he doesn't know how to manage his players because there's guys that really should be getting shots, and he puts other guys in there. I mean, he's a failure as a manager, right?
Yeah, and he's mismanaging the bullpen. There's all kinds of different stuff going on. I mean, he should be gone, and like I said before, Ray Searage should be gone. He was a man that was in front of the times, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, but right now, I mean, our pitching staff, everybody will look and say, you know what? Well, Trevor Williams came back and he was great on Saturday, and he, you know, had this many scoreless innings and different things like that. Well, you can't look at the small sample size. You have to look at across the year. You have to look at, you know, what players are doing. And pretty much like we're sitting at like maybe like a 5.96 ERA for the second half of the year. I mean, that's unacceptable. I mean, that's not something that should ever happen and people be able to continue their jobs. The way that we've been losing, people shouldn't be able to continue their jobs. When we have two catchers who between them have I think it's probably five home runs total. And especially with Elias Diaz, I don't even know how that dude even still gets on the field, because I definitely study pitch framing a decent amount. That's one of my things. And I know it may go away at some point. And I know it is going to go away when they put those stupid electronic things on there. Everybody wants them. One guy that doesn't want them is this guy. I mean, you may want him, Chris. I mean, you may disagree with me. I don't want him. I kind of like the feel of the umpire. If a guy has a 3-0 count, you know, he may get a pitch that's a little bit close and he'll get the call to get it to 3-1 to make it a little bit more competitive. When you put those things out there and it's just like, okay, this is this.
Oh, no, you see, this is the thing. I want robot umpires.
I want robot umpires.
Have you seen some of the calls that have come out this year? When we've got guys that are a full half a foot outside the strike zone that are punching guys out with men all over the bases in actual big situations in games. There's video of those kind of things happening where we're talking 6 inches, 5 to 6 inches outside of the strike zone, and the umpires are blowing the call in big situations. You know, the thing that sucks is I'm the same as you. I didn't like replay, and I didn't like the little target, because I was like, now we're going to end up with robot umpires. I was totally against the entire thing. But the more now that I watch what happens on replay, that they get the call right. They get the call right 99 out of 100 times. Sometimes they screw it up. Sometimes they still screw it up. But I mean, if you're going to have a game now where
have you seen the Pirates versus the Braves back in 2012?
Okay,
where the guy got
did I say 99 out of, did I say 99 out of 100? I didn't say 100.
I know you did. Okay. I know you did.
I'm just saying that. Okay, here's the thing. You have, think about it this way. You have calls now where they're doing the reviews and they're noticing things that are happening in the plays, and they're making the call go right. I mean, remember what it was like before review? Remember that poor guy who pitched like the near perfect game, and Jim Joyce, the umpire, what's the last guy? The guy's last name was Galarraga, pitched for the Tigers, and he had a perfect game, and the throw to first base for the final out beat the runner by a step and a half, and the umpire had a brain fart and called him safe. You know, and replay would have given him the perfect game. Like, there's been moments where it absolutely makes sense. You want to know something? I like replay because every once in a while it shows big fat Joe West that he's wrong. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, anything that'll point out to Joe West that he's wrong, I'm for it in Major League Baseball. So there are things that I like about the idea that we're going to make sure the call's done right. You know, here's the thing. If the umpires were doing a better job behind the plate, nobody be clamoring for robot umps.
And if there was something where it would almost be like, you know, the umpires were still in control of the game for the most part, but if there was like, there would be something where if it was like that outside of the realm of possibilities, something would come in his ear and go, dude, you're way off. You're like so far off, it's like not even funny.
Or like even if New York looked over him with an earpiece, or in the half inning, they had to check in and they were like, how am I doing? Or like, you're set up wrong. You are calling everything of two, you know, 3 inches to the outside. Your strike zone's off. Like mid game, somebody was trying to correct him. I would take that. With everything going on, sometimes these guys are just like, they're set up wrong, or they're getting fooled by the catcher's frame. Somebody should be alerting them to that, because they're not doing a very good job. Now, on the other hand, I always like the sneakiness of baseball. Okay, but if you're gonna
that's the thing, right? I was going for. I love the catcher framing. But I absolutely love it.
If you love the sneakiness of baseball, you can't be upset about foreign substances. If you love the sneakiness of baseball, then if the guy uses a corked bat but he doesn't get caught, is it okay? See what I'm saying? It's a slippery slope.
If you
like the sneakiness of baseball, then there should be sign stealing. There should be you got Ty Cobb coming in with his spikes up high. So there's got to be, that's the problem with the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that if there was a way where I think one of the worst things they do is they put that, you know, big box up there where it shows where the pitch is coming in. So everybody on the screen, I mean, I know a lot of people love it, that it's like, okay, that's a strike, that's a ball, that's whatever. If they completely took that away, if they had the umpire with the thing, with the earpiece in, and he was calling the game how he wanted to call it, but if there was something that was way off, it would be telling him that he's off, you know, something like that, and we didn't know it, then I'd be okay with that.
Well, my biggest thing with the box is they never see the box turn into a rectangle. It's supposed to be from the letters to the knees. So why is the box an actual square with a short little guy, and then Aaron Judge gets in and it's still a square. It should be a rectangle at that point. See, the box never adjusts, and I think that's the unfair thing about the box. When they put that graphic up there, that box stays there forever. But the rule of law is that a guy who's 5'3" has a smaller strike zone than a guy that's 6'4". And that's the issue that I have with the box. So if they're going to go to something like robot umps, they'd have a real problem with that, because otherwise, the taller guys are going to rule baseball. That's the one issue that I would have with it. Is I get that. I get what you're saying with it. But I do also think that the umps are missing on certain things. The outside, inside things are the things that they're missing on. When I see a high one, sometimes I go, well, that guy's tall. You know, when I see a low one, I go, well, you know, I mean, it depends on where was the guy crouching too much? I mean, because what the batter does sometimes affects what the umpire thinks as well. So I don't really trust it on that. But the inside outside part, that's harder to dispute. The plate's right there. I'd be okay with an inside outside thing, but the up and down thing is so subjective because it depends on the batter's height, how he gets in the box, how he presents himself to the umpire. Otherwise, you'd have a bunch of people like lining up like that Little League kid that got in a crouch so low.
Oh, yeah, and then Yasiel Puig did it like right after that.
I thought that was awesome that he did that. I'm sorry. I know that Pirates fan hates Yasiel Puig because of all this fighting and everything, and he's like public enemy number one. But let me tell you something right now. That was hysterical. Puig is
well, here's
funny.
The funny thing is I loved it because he did it the first time, and I think it was like CeCe Sabathia was looking at first base, and he didn't see him do it. So he crouched down again because he's like, I want you to see me do this.
Yeah, because he wanted CeCe to see it. It was just supposed to be a joke. He was like, CeCe, look at my joke. And Joe and CeCe didn't look at it. He's like, I got to do it again now.
That like, one was pretty funny.
They traded for Puig. Like, that's the funny thing. The Indians traded for Yasiel Puig because they're in games that matter because they're trying to win a division. And he's throwing away pitches in an at-bat. So he can make fun of a Little League kid because it's trending on Twitter.
I love it.
It's Francona's got to be sitting there going, there's not very much I can do about that, but I wish he would do that because we kind of need a hit here. You know, we're in a pennant race with the Twins right now in the AL Central. Like, it's important.
And you're giving up one or two pitches to make a joke.
Yeah, to make a joke against the Yankees. And this is all serious business out here right now. We're all going to meet each other in the playoffs, Yasiel. You're not playing for Cincinnati anymore. Let's go. These games matter. Francona had to be like, it's like dealing with Manny Ramirez again. He's the perfect guy for Puig because he dealt with Manny for so many years. See what I'm saying? So like him with Puig, he's like, same guy. Just doesn't have dreads. It's the same guy. Yeah. He's got his hair colored yellow. But I mean, it's the same guy.
Yeah, he's just going to hit bombs. He's going to strike out every once in a while. He's going to do stuff. It's goofy, but you
know
what?
He's
a good ball player.
Listen, at Puig, he's going to be a free agent. I think most teams would want him.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I mean, the Pirates hate him now, but he's like one of those guys that as soon as he would, like, you know, put on the black and gold, there'd be Puig jerseys like as far as the eye can see. I mean, they would
be
loving
everywhere.
Him.
Puig this, Puig that. Puiggy, Puiggy, Puig, Puig, Puig.
It'd be Puig Day. It'd be like, you know, National Puig Day.
Puig Day.
I mean, it'd be absolutely insane. I mean, that's how Pirates fans go. And that's why I told them, I said, Chris, in the one part of this episode, and I'm just going to go back to it just for 1 second.
All right.
Reality check. We won 3 games in a row against the Reds. We didn't win 3 games in a row against the Yankees. We didn't win 3 games in a row against the Astros at this point. Like, that's the reality check is. For Pirates fans and for, like, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's maybe other fans as well, but for Pirates fans, it's like all you need is that 3-game winning streak, and it's like, oh, everything's better now. Or if we got Puig, it'd be like, oh, we love this guy now. It's like, no, I kind of, in my eyes, I'd probably still hate him a little bit. I would cheer for him because he's playing for my team, but I'd probably still hate him for a little bit. But it's like the finickiness or like the fickleness. I think my mom used that word, fickle. Of like the fans where it's like, you know what? Pablo Reyes had a walk-off on Friday, but he's hitting, you know, 185, so he's a great player. It's like, no, Eric Gonzalez hitting 206, but you see what defensive play he made? I don't care if he makes like 5 defensive plays in a row. Unless he does it across an entire season, it doesn't matter to me. And here's the thing is we're cheering for guys like, I mean, I love Marte. I love Bell. The guys that have been brought up by Huntington, I mean, there's other guys he's signed for and different things. I mean, like Brian Reynolds wasn't a Pirate product. He came from San Francisco. So there's other things where like, he wasn't our prospect and he hit. So we're still living. I mean, that's like the biggest thing right now is we're still living in 2013, 14, and 15. And for Pirate fans, you're going to already know this happened, but I'm about to lose my freaking mind because Corey Dickerson just hit a two-run home run in the bottom of the eighth inning to put us down 5-4 against the Phillies. Are you kidding me?
We're recording. Our new deal is that we're going to record on Monday nights at the bar. But the thing is that the show's probably not even going to end up hitting everything until Wednesday or maybe even Thursday, just because of the way that my crazy schedule works. But I love the – it'll be like a time warp. We'll be going back in time and talking about what happened.
Okay? I will be depressing Pirate fans in the future from when they've already been depressed in the past, because I'm depressed right now.
That's okay. Don't worry about it, because the show's ending, okay? That's Craig. I'm Chris. Bucks in the Basement is found everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at BucksInTheBasement.com.
Another show is wrapped up. Another show's in the books. Another show is wrapped up. And then by the looks, it's gonna be a good one. And we'll see you next week. And the Nudie's Basement. And the Nudie's Basement. Another show is wrapped up. Another show is wrapped up. Another show is wrapped up. And it's in the books. Another show is wrapped up, another show is wrapped up, and by the looks, it's gonna be a good one. Nudie's Basement, broadcast basement, the Nudie's Basement, the broad basement.
Slauncha. That was like Dropkick Murphys or something, right? I felt like it.